Hello and welcome to Weekly MTG. I am one of your hosts, Blake Rasmussen, and we've got a special show today.
Oh yes, we do.
Very special.
Extremely. This is a very special episode of Weekly MTG.
A very special. Don't drink, kids. We are with the franchise team. After school specials on Weekly MTG every week.
Every week.
We are talking to the franchise team this week, which has had a lot of questions, a lot of mystery around it, which we're going to demystify what these guys do today. But first, I'd like to welcome back my co-host, Steve Sunu.
Yeah, good to be back. I've had a fun time surfing the Blind Eternities, and I'm back, ready to go. And if you're missing Paul Cheon, you'll still be able to catch him. He is now streaming on Mondays, correct?
He is streaming on Mondays on R&D Streams MTG.
Yep.
Yes.
And we'll have a little more to show you about that later on in the program.
Yes, we will.
But yeah, really great to be back, but I'm even happier to be introducing two wonderful folks that we work with here in the building. We've got Nick Kelman and Daniel Ketchum from the franchise team.
Hello.
Yeah, camera's right
Steve,
over there.
Steve knows who you are.
I do. We work together. I'm Steve. We work together.
Hi.
Oh,
hi.
Okay. Yeah, all right. But no, it's really great to have you all on the show. I know that, like Blake said, there have been a lot of questions about what the franchise team is, you know, who they are, what they do. And I feel like this is a really good opportunity to talk to you guys, first of all, a little bit about your backgrounds and then a little bit about what the franchise team does. So you guys come to Wizards of the Coast from different industries than the gaming industry, certainly. And I know a little bit about it, but they don't. So Nick, where are you coming to us from?
Well, I actually also from gaming a little bit. I've done some stuff.
You just made a liar out of it.
Yeah, oh, great.
Yeah. Steve's first show back.
Great. Sorry.
Actually, you're wrong, and all your research is for nothing.
It's fair enough. No, most of my career, the last 10 years or so, has been screenwriting and TV writing, but also doing some work for Blizzard and some other game companies on story and narrative. And so there's game experience in there. But I've been a writer for 25 years, I think, or something, and published a bunch of books, fiction and nonfiction, and then about 10 years ago, got extremely lucky with a original sci-fi screenplay that I wrote, and Steven Spielberg bought it. And so I sold everything and moved to Los Angeles. and then was lucky enough to sell movies to other studios and eventually found my way to Wizards in my current position.
Okay, and what was your, did you play Magic before you got here? Or?
I'm hesitant to admit this because it dates me, but I played Magic since 1990, from about 94 to 2000.
Mm-hmm. You already said you had a 25-year writing career.
Yeah, so that's about as long as
yeah, but I started writing when I was 4. 10.
Yeah. So I played early on, and then I stopped for a while, and then I got back into TCGs a few years ago, and then have picked Magic up again in the last year. Next week is my 1-year anniversary here, which is
congratulations!
Oh, happy anniversary!
It's staggering, but yeah.
Dan, how long have you been here?
Hi, just about 6 months now. I started in January,
okay.
So
and
yeah.
What were you doing
kind
before
of flash.
That?
Before that, I was at Marvel Comics.
Oh, I think I've heard of that place.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Steve and I actually go back. We have a secret history in comics together.
We do. It's
yeah,
true.
Yeah.
We both
use. And now that we both made it out, we talk about it like it's our nom.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
But yeah, no, I worked at Marvel Comics for 11 years, and I was an editor. I worked on Punisher and Spider-Man and Moon Knight for a couple of years before moving on to X-Men, and that's where the bulk of my time was. So yeah, I got to work on a bunch of cool books with a bunch of awesome creators. I got to do Age of X, which was a big crossover X-Men event that Mike Carey worked on. And then I got to go on and I did A-Force with Willow Wilson and Marguerite Bennett. All sorts of fun stuff. X-Men Legacy, which if you're familiar with the Legion TV show, that started Legion. So a lot of really cool projects, and now I get to come here and work on cool projects.
Well, and you've been a Magic fan for a long time too, right?
A very long time. Yeah. I mean, also since 1994, but that was very different for me than for Nick, because I was in the
because
fifth
I was
grade.
A child.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I was
I
at the like,
the cards,
I was at the elementary school lunch table,
just
like.
Yeah.
I was definitely that fifth grader who was like opening Fallen Empires boosters and being like, why do all the Thralls look different? Like, I was that kid for sure. So,
and that is actually a great transition into what your jobs actually are on on Franchise
Cam. Oh, there you go. There you go.
I'm sure when we brought up the graphics of everybody's titles already, but in case you didn't catch them, Daniel, you are the
Senior Franchise Art Director.
And Nick is
Principal Entertainment Designer.
Right. So
what do those mean?
It's a good question.
Is that
changes every day.
I like to think of it in my head as words and pictures.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Kind of right. Yeah.
Well, so why don't you tell us about what the franchise team is? Because we've said that word a bit now for the past year that the franchise team has been around ish.
Heck, we've said it a lot of times in the first couple of minutes of this stream.
The first couple of minutes of this stream. But what is the franchise team?
So for the past year and moving into the future, Magic is spreading out into a bunch of new expressions. And so this team was kind of created to help tie all of those expressions together in terms of story and art and communicate between them and also work directly on several of them.
Really what it is, you know, Magic, 25 years now, it's been primarily known as existing inside a frame of cardboard about this big. Mm-hmm. And so the franchise team, we're here to kind of like break out of that frame mm-hmm. and see, well, where else can Magic go in terms of story, art, its reach, really changing the way that people interact with Magic.
Right. And so starting with the card game and starting with the story and lore from the card game, it's how do we work with those guys and take those elements and spread them out into different places.
Okay. When you were making the box and talking about breaking out of the card frame, I could hear your boss. Who else is on the franchise team?
Yeah, so we work for Jeremy Jarvis, who's been here for a very long time.
He was artist, art director.
And has commissioned, I think, 9,930 pieces of art and is very upset that he kept count of that. 70 short.
And he's very bashful when you bring up the pieces of art that he has contributed to Magic, like Lightning Greaves or Ad Nauseam. Yeah. He's always like, oh, yeah, I did that card.
So he's the head of the franchise team, and then there's a bunch of other people on it, including Matt Cavada, who's been here for a long time, and Chino Choi, and
Garrett Turner, Matt Danner, Jordan Komar, all of our favorites.
In fact, everybody on the team has been here a long time except us.
Yeah, except for us. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, you guys are the new guys, which is why volunteered for this. Everyone else had enough like chutzpah to be like, no, I'm not doing this.
They know who I am.
It's hazing.
Yeah. talk a little, you've mentioned that you work with bringing a lot of these disparate elements together. What other teams in the building do you work with, and what's that relationship like?
Well, I mean, so on the narrative side, I work intimately with the world building team. Mm-hmm. So the story people who have been here and been in charge of story forever, like Jenna Helen and Doug Bayer and Ken Troop, I meet with them two or three times a week for quite a long time to talk about the card story and to talk about all the other things that we're planning and coordinate on that. And and then we work with the digital teams about to help them out with making sure that the expressions that they're creating there are also part of that same framework. Mm-hmm. So those are, for me, that's who I primarily work with in the building.
Yeah, well, I mean, and then, really, it's Magic's, I mean, we're talking about the franchise team sort of managing Magic's outward face to the world in a lot of ways in terms of story and narrative and art. And right now, that specifically is the Planeswalkers. Mm-hmm. And so we're in a lot of ways the stewards of the Planeswalkers. We share that responsibility with R&D. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about, well, anything that the Planeswalkers touch, we have some sort of a hand in. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just about everything we're doing.
It's a lot of things.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a lot.
So Nick's listed a few of those departments, but you know, I'd say that, you know, we're in the lucky position where we get to interface with everyone throughout the building. Mm-hmm. Can you find folks? So yeah, it's pretty great.
Now, Nick, you said something that made me think. The world building team. So mm-hmm. a lot of people, since you guys started taking over story, have been a little confused about what the relationship is with the world building team mm-hmm. and you guys. And can you talk a little bit more about that relationship and what they do?
I mean, I don't know where taking over story came from. Story was always a thing that, like, a handful of people on the world building team, if they had the time on nights and weekends, mm-hmm. would generate. And as Magic Story grew, and as I said, as Magic as a franchise wants to start branching out into a bunch of other media, it was just too big a job for those people, and not fair to those people. So the way that it's working right now is those folks that I mentioned before, and with input from me and Daniel, were kind of together generating the plan for story across everything, basically. Mm-hmm. And then the fiction piece, the written piece, is at that point, once we agree on what the story should be and what the character should be and the direction, then that piece, that kind of that core is then handed off to me, and I'm going out right now and finding writers to execute on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, once drafts come in, there's still a lot of back and forth. Like, Jenna and I go over every story together, and mm-hmm. and not just, it's not like the world building team is just checking lore. Like, Jenna's an amazing writer and editor, and so.
Jenna's the best.
Yeah. She really is the best. And I don't know how she has time to do all this, because editing those stories takes up an enormous amount of my time. Mm-hmm. And for Jenna, it's like extra work. So, but, yeah, so the generation is hand in hand with me, with the people who have always been doing it, and mm-hmm. then its execution in the cards is being handled by the people who have always done it, and then its execution in other media is being handled by me as the coordinator. But we're bringing in great creators for everything, writers and other people to mm-hmm. execute on it in each medium.
I'm glad that you mentioned writers, because we've definitely taken a different approach to who is generating that story, mm-hmm. From in terms of the actual execution of the writing,
mm-hmm.
Because, for Dominara's story, we had Martha Wells mm-hmm. come in and do Dominara's story. Mm-hmm. Now we've got Kate Elliott doing the story for mm-hmm. M19. What's been your process in looking for a writer for these stories? How do you evaluate, who it is that we want to come in and help generate this content?
So when I came in, Jeremy and I talked about this a lot, and Magic has a reputation that's second to none for fantasy art. So what we're trying to do is set out to kind of create a second to none reputation for fiction as well. A, great writers. B, we initially wanted people who had a long enough career of creating their own material that we felt like they would be able to handle these big worlds and be able to handle the storytelling and bring different voices that were clear voices to each set of stories. And then the other thing we want to do, just like on the magic art side, is find newer talent who have proved, have a book or two books out that like really prove that they are great writers, but then bring them in and try to get their work out a little bit and help promote them a little bit as well as writers. So it's kind of twofold. So that's kind of the criteria.
Well, and the outside writers thing, It was almost a coincidence that you guys came on at about the same time that we started using outside writers. Not exactly, but we've been, I know Ken Troop, who you mentioned earlier, he and I have been talking for a couple of years now about, can we bring in extra writers? Can we bring in outside writers? Because, like you said, it was extra work that people like Jenna and Allison were doing on their lunch breaks and after work and stuff like that. What was kind of finally the impetus to be able to bring in outside writers? Was it just we had money and time?
Yes.
Great.
Cool.
And that's our show. Thank you.
Oh, here we go.
You heard it here first.
No, I mean, of course. Look, it's like I said. The decision was made before either of us got here mm-hmm. at a high level that Magic wanted to expand into. Lots of different media, mm-hmm. and so that created the money, and then they brought me and Daniel on, and that created the time,
mm-hmm.
and obviously we both have a history in publishing, so mm-hmm. So that was also part of it, where I've been reaching out to people that I know who are fiction writers and fantasy authors and agents, and bringing those people in,
mm-hmm.
and then. And Daniel's been doing the same. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think there's something really exciting about, this is also always the case at Marvel when I was editing comics, right? Is X-Men have been around for 50 some odd years. It was always exciting when a new writer with new ideas walked in the door with their own point of view, and they were like, hey, I'm going to tell my story, but through the lens of these characters. And you would get something that felt, grounded and authentic and cool to that person and the property, but kind of everything working together was something new and different. It sort of expanded what X-Men did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I'm really excited about the franchise team doing with Magic, is, you know, it's awesome to have Jenna and Allison continuing to contribute, but I'm also excited for the new voices that come in who are like, okay, if I did something with Chandra, or if I did something with Garrick, or, you know, you go down the list of Planeswalkers, like, what might that look like, or what could that be, and where could that take
Yeah, magic? And I've said that before, too, in other interviews for us, that giving those writers room to breathe is really important. I mean, it's like, there's no point in bringing in these great talents that have their own voices, and then telling them they absolutely have to write this exactly like this. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you can't even tell who they are. So it's like you want them to bring their own stuff to it, you know. And for instance, like Kate Elliott, like she does her character relationship stuff, particularly between women, is great. And so I thought, okay, like we want to tell this story about Bolas and Ugin, and we wanted to have a frame story, which actually was going to be a little different originally. And Kate came in and she was like, you know, I'd love it to be this thing. And I was like, that is awesome. And like, let's do that. And so she has really brought all of that rich character relationship stuff to the Bolas and Ugin story, which is really what their story needed. and that's very different. And some of the stories that I can't tell you about that we have coming up are tonally very, very different, and so we have a completely different writer who's really good at that kind of stuff. That's really important.
So the Tarkir stuff in the current story, that was Kate's idea. You didn't come to her and say...
Yeah, well, so we wanted to do a framing story for a variety of reasons, and we wanted Bolas present... covertly present in the framing story. It was very, what we went to her with was very kind of plot driven, if that makes any sense. And so, and we went to her with Bolas and Ugin being spiritual twins, at least, right? So, and she came back and was like, well, you know what would be cool would be is if the framing story was also twins and their relationship mirrored the Bolas and Ugin story. And I was like, yeah, of course, that would be great. That's why we're hiring you, and I'm not doing it. So, like, yeah, exactly. So it was a bit of both, but yeah, the twins and the Tarkir thing. She really likes Tarkir.
And it's a cool place.
Yeah, well, and she likes dragons. She likes dragons, and you know, as a fantasy author, she hasn't. I'm not even sure she's written a lot of stuff. So I may be misspeaking, but I'm not sure she's done anything with a dragon in it. And so I think it was something for her that maybe. And I don't want to put words in her mouth either, but that maybe writing dragons is kind of like we always want the dragons, you know? It's like, and I know that she, when we were talking to her about it, she asked her daughter if she should do the story, and her daughter was like, I think so, what's it about? And she was like, well, they want me to tell this story about this dragon, Nicole Bolas, and this other dragon. And the daughter was like, do it!
Yeah, because her daughter played magic.
Yeah, when we had Kate on the show earlier this year, she told us a little bit of that story. And it's really cool just to see how far magic has, you know, proliferated in 25 years that it's been around, that there are fans all over the place.
Yeah.
One of the cool things about framing, I'm glad that you talked about framing, because Blake, I remember you mentioning the other day that magic art had a very different connection to the story way back.
Us old people played, yeah.
Right, when all of us old people played, yeah.
We've got some cards back from kind of the Weatherlight era, that whole saga, like Capsize, Reap, Insight, if we can show some of those up on the screen, where Magic Story and the cards, it was almost like a storyboard, where you could lay out the cards, and it was like, this event, even to, like, that's a flying ship that's not really capsizing, and I'm not sure what that has to do with, like, returning
something
to your
hand. That's not just any flying ship.
Like, I love that spell. I don't know what the art is trying to tell me.
Of course you love that spell.
But it's a story, of course. But it's a story moment. And then we move forward and, you know, Reap, it's people standing around talking, which... sure. And then more Insight, Insight was the previous card. More people standing around talking, which of course has to do with
reaping.
Obviously.
And, that's what I think of when I see Reap, or hear the word Reap, that's exactly the scene that I think
exactly.
of.
Exactly. So that's what it used to be like. And then these days we've kind of moved to story spotlight cards. So Hour of Devastation and Perilous Voyage were the two we picked out, but
you can see them on the screen here.
So this was obviously a moment, but if you look through the Hour of Devastation set, it's not storyboarded.
Right.
Things are allowed to breathe on their own. So I kind of took that over. Steve, you had a question.
Yeah, no, that was my question. Basically, well, I mean, well, if you
that was a statement.
That was a statement. Like, you'd spoken about that the other day.
And Steve poses the premise.
Yeah, it's what we called the catch and release.
Yeah, something like that.
Or something like that. No, but it's so. This is a really cool way that Magic has framed story and art together. How do you see card art and story connecting as we continue to move forward? Clearly, this is one expression, but you know, over 25 years, a lot of things have changed.
It's not going to be dissimilar from how we do it now. There's still going to be story spotlight cards. Something that we're going to try to do is have them be more the major beats of the story that aren't necessarily so closely connected to each other, but very similar. Mm-hmm. The trick is that we come up with the card story so far before anybody is writing it, and it has to be locked in for the card set so far before, that it's important that the story spotlight cards are things that we know will be the most important elements of the story. So I think I think what that answer boils down to is that we're not really changing much, except that the story spotlight cards will really focus on the biggest beats of the stories. Some of the cards over the years have been smaller moments.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the thing.
Like Hannah and Gerard sitting around chatting with Aladri about, like, hey, what's going on?
For example.
How you doing?
Yeah.
What do you have for breakfast?
Yeah,
I actually do want to know that. Like, was that, if that's what they were asking, I want to hear that conversation. That sounds.
We'll talk. Yeah. We'll figure it out.
We should.
So you kind of started touching on it here with the story spotlight cards, but how difficult is it to juggle telling a story on cards and also telling a story in other formats? What are the challenges you guys face there?
Well, there's a lot. I mean, do you want to talk about the artistic challenges, first of all?
I mean, they're two pretty different animals, right? Because a card, you get a frozen moment in time mm-hmm. that can only capture so much, and maybe a line or two of flavor text.
Yeah.
And so there's only so much that you can convey there. I mean, I think that Magic has done a kind of an incredible job of conveying as much as they have over the years. They've found ways to maximize that little piece of cardboard as much as they can in, like, the type line, the title. They've managed to communicate so much. But I think that, again, as we look outside the card frame, there's so much more room to explore and to spread out and to do other cool things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, so, obviously there's the graphic element of, like, all our characters are shown from the front. So that's something that, like, we have to start thinking about if we're going to go into other media. It's like, well, what are the backs, you know, like very simple things like that. And then on the story side of things, there's, the cards serve as an outline. So from a fiction perspective, from a narrative perspective, it's not that different moving from that to fleshing out that story. I think the bigger hurdle is actually more like the technical one in a way, where it's like a lot of characters, a lot of character work is done by the technical aspects of a card, particularly mm-hmm. for planeswalkers who don't have flavor text on their card. And so people's perception of who that character is sort of, like, Sarkon's a great example, right? Like, he generates dragons. It's like, so this is a guy who's really into dragons, right? It's mm-hmm. like, so the trick is staying true to those technical aspects of character, but turning them into a character thing.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you express, well, he loves dragons in a narrative way and not a technical way? So I think that's from a...
Well, that's an easy one. Like, I mean, hard ones are like, your girl Tamiyo.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
How do you take,
well,
like...
Hardest,
yeah, right? Because, like, yeah. How do you take, like, oh, she taps permanents and draws you cards in the game to, well, but what's her power then in a story or
yeah.
in a, you
yeah.
know, any number of media expressions, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can't necessarily have Tamiyo, like, you know, in a novel be like, I'm drawing this unknown entity
yeah.
cards.
Yeah. So, yeah. So from a narrative perspective, the moving from the bullet point outline that are story spotlights to story, that's not that tricky. The tricky thing is staying true to the technical spirit of the card, because that's really, like, well, it's gameplay becoming narrative. That's mm-hmm. the trickiest piece.
Okay. Daniel, we've been talking a lot about writing, so let's move on to pretty pictures. you've got some people in the building right now who are outside artists. What's it like working with outside artists on this sort of stuff? And tell us what you can about the artists in the building?
Okay, let's see here.
Well,
let's see.
I'd assume working in comics, you've worked with outside artists before.
Many. More than I'd care to admit.
Twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you know, that's always the toughest thing, right? It was because obviously you want to give, as we talked about before, we want to give them room to play and take their hand to the characters and own those characters themselves, but mm-hmm. still we want to make sure that they are authentic and that rings true for the fans. So, like, for example, if you have, you know, Storm, you want to make sure that, like, hey, we can do things with Storm that are, you know, cool and amazing and eye-catching that we've never seen before, and new things that will excite people, but you still want to make sure that it rings authentic for those die-hard Storm fans, Daniel Ketchum. Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing that we're doing now with Magic. Now, with Magic, there's a little bit more room to explore just because, again, on a card you get this little picture and you only get so much room. So, for example, let's take Chandra. Mm-hmm. You know, Chandra, there's this question of, again, we know Chandra, kind of what she looks like from all angles, but we've seen lots of different kinds of expressions of her powers. Well, what definitively are her powers? How do they look? What's out of bounds? What's, you know, fair use in terms of, like, well, what could she do, like, on the spot? What does it look like when she's casting a spell? Mm-hmm. You know, how is that different from what it looks like when Jace casts a spell? Mm-hmm. And so the artists that we're in the building right now are getting to kind of dive into all that fun stuff. I mean, Nick and Jeremy and I have had lots of conversations about, like, okay, well, what might those powers be and how might they work? But the cool thing we're working with the artists now is we get to turn that over and be like, okay, now you go, and we want to see, like, you know, what can you make of that? Mm-hmm. And so they're experimenting right now and figuring out, like, okay, well, what do Chandra's powers look like? And what's a cool way to express, you know, Teferi slowing time, or, you know, Nahiri crafting weapons out of stone? Mm-hmm. And so I'm super excited to see what they come up with and then what doors that might open for us in the future.
Okay.
Has it been interesting for you, having previously worked in, like, a very clear sequential storytelling medium, to come and move here and sort of see... sort of work on an in-between place that's not quite sequential storytelling, it's not quite static, but it's somewhere in between. Has that been pretty cool for you, coming into work here?
Absolutely. I mean, again, you know, Marvel, so in a lot of ways, again, 50 years of continuity built up for X-Men, there are some things that people kind of have accepted as truth, or they've already sort of iterated on things and figured out, oh, this is the coolest way for Nightcrawler's powers to work. I mean, until an X2 comes along and changes the game.
Right.
But that's sort of, you know, the stage that we're in with Magic right now is like, we haven't had an opportunity to do a lot of that iterating, so it's like the Wild West. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of room to explore and play around and try new things and figure out, oh, what's the coolest way that you can express this power? And so, like, it's been a really neat experience going from somewhere where it's like, okay, I get to play with toys where we all know what they are and how they work, to being like, oh, here's a toy. I get to help discover what it is and discover how it works. It's been really cool.
Nice. Okay. Awesome.
Now, I'm gonna throw out a buzzword for the fans. I've heard your boss, Jeremy Jarvis, he likes to use a lot of different phrases, but transmedia narrative is one that he throws around a bit. So besides sounding really good to our vice president, what does that phrase mean, and what does it mean for the future of the story of Magic?
Well, it comes back to what the team is for. It is just a fancy kind of corporate jargon term for, like, well, we're telling stories in lots of different places. Mm-hmm. So how do you make sure that they all are consistent in such a way that they all feel like the same characters in the same worlds and the same voices, even though you have different people telling those stories? So mm-hmm. That's really what it is.
How does Deadpool sound the same in the comic, in the movie, in a commercial for Taco Bell, right? Like, it's like figuring out, well, what are those commonalities in court?
you just totally gave away that Chandra's doing a commercial for Taco Bell.
I mean,
it's not happening. It's not happening.
Relax,
chat. Yes, call us Taco
Relax.
Bell.
Relax. Take the finger off the mouse button. It's fine. So when I love this show. When you're building characters, right? When uh-huh. you're exploring them, you're exploring what they can do, how they look. We touched on this a little bit with sort of, you know, looking at their powers and exploring that, but what else is the franchise team looking to do with these characters that Magic maybe hasn't done before?
Do you want this one? Do you want me to take it? What you got? What you got, Kelman?
Can you just elaborate on that a little bit? Like,
yeah, sure. It was really cool when Daniel was talking about, you know, looking at. Oh, of course.
Don't even know what it is.
He doesn't know what it is. He'll take credit. But it was great. It was interesting here when he was talking about, you know, the different expressions of power, trying to figure out what those are, and looking at characters from different angles. We see them head on, like you mentioned. We don't get to see a lot of them to the side or from the back. And when you're building up these characters, as you explore what makes them tick, like with Sarkin,
right.
You know, what are you looking to do that Magic might not have done previously?
Well, I think I think the most important thing is building up more relationships between them. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's been done in the web fiction, but the web fiction compared to the size of the Magic audience, the web fiction audience is very small. So I think it's really important that one thing that, you know, the cards have those cool moments, but people talking is not the best card, and yet that's often the best moment in a story, right? Because that's the human interaction and the human relationship. So I think that, like, that's the thing that really... there's been some incredible work in the web fiction on relationships, but like, take that, amplify it, add to it, because it's been only the characters that have been in the web fiction, but try to create those great relationships between all our major characters and get those great relationship moments and emotional moments out there in lots of different media. So I think from a storytelling perspective, that's probably the biggest hurdle for us in the next few years. Yeah,
I think depending on who you are and what you bring to the property right now, you might see our planeswalkers to varying degrees as like three-dimensional people. And I think that's the thing that we're most excited about, is building them out so that they're, you know, living, breathing human beings to us the way that like characters from other properties are. I think relationships, that's a huge one. Like, I mean, at Marvel, there was always the question of like, okay, well, who's smooching who? And it's like, you know what I mean? And it's like, I think that's so wrong. Like, you know, who's smooching who in the multiverse, Nick Hellman?
Yeah, well, some people are. But
I think that's a big one. And, you know, beyond that, it's you know, what makes these characters tick? You know, what are their motivations? What do they want beyond winning a player a game, right? Mm-hmm. What hurts them? What do they find funny, and how are they funny? Like, that's a big one, because I feel like that's a huge space for us to explore, right? So all sorts of new things. I also think there are some characters that, like, the card game wouldn't necessarily care about, that even just, like, in, like, lunchtime chats, you know, amongst the franchise team, we'll be like, oh, man, it'll be awesome if we get a character like this. And so hopefully we'll get to do more of that as we explore some of these other spaces.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting coming into the building. Like, I just had this experience today with somebody who came in from the outside who's going to do some work for us. Like, you don't realize how opaque Magic Story is to a lot of the world. Like, there are the fans who know the web fiction and know the stories, but they're a small part of our audience right now. And, like, to all of us sitting here on this couch, like, we know all these stories, we know all these relationships, but it's kind of, we want to bring that out into the world, mm-hmm. and broaden it and like, get that, get it out there that people, that some people are smooching other people.
Yeah. And so that when Chandra says two lines of dialogue in her Taco Bell commercial, you know from
which
that exactly who she
happening.
Is.
It's not happening. This is not
a thing.
Don't stop it. Stop it.
Someone at Taco Bell is real happy about all the free evidence. Yeah.
Okay. Moving on. Besides commercials.
Now you're making me all hungry. Yeah. And it's
is this how we get choco tacos?
Three days
answering tacos.
This is how, yeah. this is
how it starts. This is how it starts.
No regrets. Don't feel sorry.
So in your guys' happy places in your head, so not necessarily in like what you know is happening, definitely not commercials. How do you see people being able to experience the Magic story with a lowercase s in the further future, like 2022, 2025?
Well, the dream situation is like every way that people experience story for other big IPs. So, I mean, we want to see comics, we want to see graphic novels, we want to see novels, we want to see some kind of film or TV. So in the dream state years from now, it would be that. So
okay.
And then there's the digital aspect, so other other games that are not card games,
mm-hmm.
so like I don't know, open world RPG or something like that. Like,
I feel like fans of Magic are kind of in on the secret right now of how deep Magic can go and how what potential it has for telling awesome stories and bringing awesome experiences to players of the game, but also just like, you know, people who like latch onto the characters and the stories. And so I think that, you know, ideally, you know, in some amount of time, hopefully sooner rather than later, will offer those people lots of avenues to participate in Magic and to express that fandom and to share that with other people in any number of ways. All the things that Nick just listed, but even like, you can go to a store and you can find a banana that has like a, you know, a character on it, you know what I mean, on the little sticker. I would love for the, not making another pitch for like a thing, but for, you know, to see
Chandra
Magic
bananas.
Characters. Yeah, Chandra bananas, why
also
not?
Not no.
But you know what I mean? No. Like, you know, you can see, you know, you can go out and get that Chandra Snuggie or whatever it is that you want,
yeah.
You know, where you can interact with the characters in lots of different ways. And I hope that we're as pervasive in the future as some of the other entertainment brands, because I think that Magic has the potential to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost a unique situation where there's this enormously rich universe and history and story and 25 years of stuff. And like, when I bring a writer in, I'm like, look, you probably don't know this, but the Magic universe is like 20-30% the size of the Marvel universe. Mm-hmm. Like, and then, so it's a lot of immersion. Mm-hmm. Like, I just had this experience the other day where we brought a writer on and I sent him all the stories he has to read to catch up, and he's like, he like had a breakdown. I was like, I don't understand. I told you there was a lot of backstory you have to catch up on. But so, so it's an interesting situation where it's like, this thing exists, and it's like, how do we get it out there in the world so that everybody else can see how cool it is?
So, like, my mom understands who Chandra is.
Yes.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Mom.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Blake's mom.
Yay!
Happy birthday, Blake's mom.
Cool. Well, so let's continue on that thread. Do you see a point where characters, planeswalkers, are introduced in places that are not the card game? So we've done this with Dak Faden, who was introduced in the comic before he ever got a card. But do you see this becoming a more regular occurrence? Like, we have a Saturday morning cartoon and we meet a planeswalker.
Do they even do Saturday morning cartoons anymore?
I hope so. For like, my future child's sake. Yeah,
they're great.
But I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, ignoring that, basically, do you see, where's the story cart, where's the story horse, which comes first?
I'm sure that we will introduce characters, planeswalkers, in other media sometime, like at some point in the future. I certainly hope that that stuff exists so that we can do that. I can imagine that it would be a lead into that character appearing in the card set at some point. Mm-hmm. So I would be surprised if we introduced a planeswalker in particular without some idea that in the next year or two they might appear in the card set or somewhere else and eventually in the card set. But certainly non-planeswalkers. I mean, it's kind of already, like Kate's stories have already happened. And there's been some really fun theories about how that frame story ties into upcoming card set stuff and things. So
that was Nick really holding back from saying anything.
No, it's all public stuff. I'm just saying, like, it's been interesting to see people tie stuff together. But I think at some point if we introduce a planeswalker, it's probably with the intent of that character eventually being seen everywhere, including the card set. So it's whether it happens to come first outside of the card set is not necessarily material. Yeah.
Okay. So that covers most of what we wanted to at least introduce you guys to. We have a ton of questions from fans.
We do.
If you are in Twitch chat right now and you want to ask a question, feel free to throw it in there. We've got a whole list to get through.
So don't be offended if we're not
don't
able
be offended
to
if we don't get
the Twitch
to you,
questions
but
yet.
Feel free to throw questions at us. I've got a bunch from Twitter. Before we do that, however, while the questions roll in, we've got some rapid fire round
here we go.
To test a little bit of your story background and knowledge. And well, this question does neither of those things.
Oh.
But the first question.
Good lead in, Blake.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, master of transitions. Who would win in a fight, Fibblethip or Zindersplit? Spit.
I say Fibblethip because his eye is slightly bigger.
Okay, that's
I said Fibblethip by default because the other guy won't be able to find him. He's totally lost.
All right, which Gatewatch member or former member would win in a foot race?
To me, it's obviously Chandra.
Chandra.
Yeah, it's got to be Chandra.
Okay.
She's real fast.
Yep.
Is that canon?
She real fast? Yes.
She real fast. She real fast. Character bio. Yeah. Spire from Kaladesh originally.
She real fast.
She real fast. If you were having a kid and had to name them after a magic character, what would you name them?
Avacyn.
Ooh.
Really?
That's very
pretty. Yeah.
Avacyn Kelman?
Yeah. Maybe Sarah, but like, I think Avacyn.
Slimefoot. No.
Slimefoot. Yarnkle.
Tiana, I'd consider, though.
Tiana's nice.
Because I like the character of Tiana so much.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like the name. Yeah, I could see that.
All I don't know. I love it. I like the name Avacyn.
Okay. The next rapid fire question is, on what plane would you most like to vacation?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Lorwyn.
So, yeah. Okay. Pre-Shadowmoor.
Right. I would hope pre-Shadowmoor.
Lorwyn.
Yeah.
Fairies and goblins are going to get all up in your business, though?
No, but they're the nice kind. I don't know. I've always had a thing for, like, Victorian fairy art and, like, Arthur Rackham and that kind of stuff. I don't know. I love
Rackham. Look at you.
That way you just get a camera and, like, just take pictures of the surrounding.
Yeah, it just seems like, it just seems like it would be a nice, you know, the fairies would bring you cocktails and things like that. Seems like it would be a good place.
Probably Fiora. I don't know. I don't know that that's as familiar to people.
You know you can just go to Florence, right?
Well, that's why I want to go to Fiora, though.
the world where the conspiracy sets are.
Correct.
Yeah. Get stabbed.
Oh, there you go, Blake. There you go.
Who's your favorite magic character?
Elspeth.
I was about to say, why is it Elspeth Terrell?
I love her. I mean, I know that she had a rocky start, but I've loved her story from the beginning. I don't know if you remember, Jeremy Jarvis actually edited some comics back in the day that sort of told some of the origin stories of the Planeswalkers.
Right.
And Elspeth's origin story just from the beginning really resonated with me, that she started sort of like as this slave on this planet colonized by the Phyrexians and everything. And that
is, Daniel also was born as a slave on a Phyrexian planet.
Yes.
So. Yep, completely identified. But then she overcame it. She became, you know, Elspeth, you know, this like tremendous leader, the Captain America of the Planeswalker lineup, you know what I mean? Always Elspeth.
Tommyo.
Nice.
Tommyo. Okay. Story magic.
That makes sense.
That's good.
All right.
What is your favorite magic story? I guess we know yours.
Well, you know that, but from that same collection, you know what else was good? Was the Garrick story.
That one was great.
Yeah. But that told his origin story and his relationship with his father. That, I think, that was definitely an avenue where it took a character who was cool in the cards, but then added layers in a way that we're looking to add layers to Planeswalkers, where you understood something, and whereas the cards are cool, it was that story that made me kind of love Garrick a little bit.
I'm a fan of Liliana's arc overall, but I think Shadows of Innistrad I really like, and I hate to say it, but I really like the M19 story.
I was involved with it, but
it's just like as I saw it come to fruition, it's really like I think she did just a fantastic job.
I can vouch for that. Nick came up to me several times, excited, like, "Have you read the story?
Yeah.
You read the story. This one moved me.
Yeah. So."
And then Blake came up to me and was like, "Oh, have you read the story yet? The story's really good.
I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah.
Favorite storyteller you've never worked with.
Tough one. Oh, well, no, you go.
Herman Melville.
Okay.
Sorry for that, too.
Because I was going
to
say Jim Henson, and I was like, I don't know if I can answer him. But Jim Henson. I'm on a big Jim Henson kick right now.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay.
I have one more question. What do you think of Blake's tie?
Very nice.
I think it doesn't cause interference on the monitor.
Yeah, it doesn't do that. It was mostly, so you can see I'm wearing black today, which does not, I blend into the background, so it's like, they have to know I have a torso. So that's this.
So that's the tie?
That's nice. The tie.
The tie is your torso.
My torso
identifier.
This is where Blake's torso is,
right, life
approximately.
Pro tip, if you want to show people you have a torso, wear a tie.
Wear a tie.
Wear a tie.
All right, let's move on to some Q&A. So these are all fan questions, straight from the internet. So this one is I love butchering Twitter handles, J2 Mercado. Can we see repeat authors for Magic Story? Kate Elliott has been killing it with her Chronicles of Bolas and would love to see her writing again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a plan to get people onboarded with the history and the lore and the stories and the characters, and then hopefully go back to them, just like we do for Magic Art. So okay. The trick is it's a longer timeline, right? So and we don't necessarily want to do people back to back, but yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
From at Charlequin on Twitter, what did the transition process for the story to the franchise team look like, and how did that affect the process for plotting the story? I think we touched on this a little bit earlier.
Yeah, we did. It hasn't transitioned. It's been more that we kind of integrated with them. So the story still starts with the card set and is planned out a long time ahead. So it's more that I've become involved in their process and brainstorming with them, and we're kind of working on story structures together and planning out characters for the next few years. Mm-hmm. And then we talked about this already. And then I kind of take the fiction piece and then hand that off to an author. And
gotcha. So the world building team is still doing what the world building team does. Yeah. And you kind of come in and help them do that other stuff.
Yeah.
This was the...
I love this question.
This is a great story. A question. From Chrysopoetics?
Good one.
I think so.
Yeah.
What is story for?
What is story for?
What is story for?
What is story for?
What are we without story? That's what
I... Is that how you're answering the question?
If that is the question, the answer is, what are we without story? No, but seriously, like, I mean, that's such a meta question. I mean, to me, I think a lot about this. My undergrad degree is actually in neuroscience, and so I'm constantly thinking about the connection, because when you break down story structure, it's always the same themes coming up, and good stories always have at the most macro level very similar story elements. Mm-hmm. And since it's a meta question, I think the meta answer is stories really help us learn and understand the world in a way that we never forget.
Sure.
So they're sort of there's no substitute for experience except stories sometimes, right? Like, you can tell somebody to not make a mistake and they just will go and make the mistake and then they'll learn from it. But if they hear a story about it, they learn that in a more deep-rooted way than just a fact. Mm-hmm. So I think stories really help us understand the world, they help us understand relationships, so that's what I think story is for.
Okay.
That was a really good answer to a question.
That's
that
the most profound thing I've ever heard you say. Yeah, that was amazing.
Thanks.
That was a profound question. Yeah, you got a profound answer. Yeah. No, it was good. So given our large and diverse audience, is it difficult to incorporate overarching, and this kind of actually dovetails with what you just said. This is from Alma V. MTG. Given the large and diverse audience, is it difficult to incorporate overarching themes or life lessons into the story? Is it, quote, just a story, or could we learn a thing or two from the story to apply to our own lives?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just answered. I mean,
a story for?
Yeah, what a story. Yeah, I think if a story is a good story, there's always stuff to learn from it, yeah.
Sure.
I mean, be it you're talking about the Marvel Universe or the multiverse of magic, right? Like, there are lots of fantastical elements that are not like our world at all, but almost in the specificity of the story, you want people to see their experiences reflected.
Yeah.
And so there's a way in which story can be universal and resonate. And so I think that, you know, in terms of, we have an incredibly diverse audience, and I think we have an increasingly diverse world, but hopefully it's in the telling of it, in the specificities, that, you know, people can kind of see best whatever is cosmetic and find that universality that they can relate to.
Yeah, right. And the strength of fantasy and science fiction has always been that you can tell stories that if you told them head on, you wouldn't be able to tell in that particular time and place. Mm-hmm. So I think if anything, like, fantasy stories or science fiction stories in a lot of circumstances are the only way to tell certain stories, you know, before the world's ready to accept them. And
sure.
It's like, so, and then you can do things that you can also have great what-if situations, mm-hmm. you know, you can have magical circumstances where a father is younger than his daughter, for example. Like, that's a really cool thing. Like, what does that look like, you mm-hmm. know? So, yeah.
Next question is from at Ectocooler Ranch on Twitter. It's a great, name.
What would that name. Wait? Like Ectocooler, like the high C flavor with the ranch. Like what would that taste like?
I don't know.
I mean, I I actually.
Steve's childhood. Steve's childhood. Yeah.
That's gonna be Chandra's Taco Bell drink.
It's not happening.
With
it's
a Chandra.
Not happening.
With a Chandra's favorite whatsoever. Taco Bell meal.
It's a combo meal. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, memes. From Ecto Cooler Ranch on Twitter asks: is there a conscious effort put towards developing unique world-building concepts like villains, races, and factions?
So I would put villains in a different category than the other two things. The short answer is yes, but the villains piece is less a world building thing than a story thing, and the races and factions is a world building thing for sure. Okay. Yeah.
I also think yes, because you know, again, the card game has very specific wants and needs, right? Like for example, the cards that will want to visit worlds where like you can get out of it the things that are important to Magic, like five colors and certain kinds of conflicts and a good setting that you know you can get a very full world to explore with the cards. Underwater world would be a tough one to explore in the card game because sure. It's hard to get all five colors of mana out of that and like what kind of conflicts do you have and everything else. Not impossible. It would be tougher than some of the others. But like Magic Story, on the other hand, where you're not fettered by the same considerations, it's very easy to be like, yeah, we're going to tell a quick story on Underwater World, or they're going to visit this plane that, you know, where like all matter is immaterial. It's all music, or it's all, you know, like flashing lights. And it's like, we couldn't get a full cards out of that, but we could get a chapter of fiction out of that. And so I think that more and more there's room to explore new and different kinds of worlds.
Okay. This question comes from Twitch chat.
So you're not prepared.
Uh-oh.
What considerations, if any, go into building a narrative that shares elements with ancient history or current societal trends? Hmm. So basically, what happens when you dip into the real world a little bit for story inspiration?
One more time?
What considerations, if any, go into building a narrative that shares elements with ancient history or current societal trends? So we saw this with a lot of our earlier sets, where, mm-hmm. for example, Arabian Nights was based off the
1001.
Yeah, 1001 Tales.
Well, sure, Amonkhet or something, but it's different for world building than it is for story.
Mm-hmm.
So those are really different considerations. I think on the story side of things, I don't know, I guess, and this is just for story in general, I think you don't want to be too on the nose. Like if you're, especially with like the societal trends part, like it's funny that I was just talking about science fiction and what science fiction and fantasy does well. Like mm-hmm. it's kind of looking at things out of the corner of your eye a little bit. So that's the primary consideration, I think, is like, I think if you set out to tell a story about like something that's happening right now in society as the story is going to be a lesson about that thing, it's very difficult to make that a good thing. But if it grows out of the story, that is usually a bit better. And I think that's because it tends to be not quite exactly the thing. It's mm-hmm. kind of refracted a little bit, and that enriches it a little. The historical tropes thing is a different. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, I mean, to build off what you were saying, you know, I think there's something really cool about taking the science fiction fantasy lens to something that's familiar, right? Because once you kind of like put it through enough filters, it starts to look distant enough that you can kind of shed your own perceptions about the whatever baggage you've got with the real world thing that we're talking about, be it a place, historical event, person, topic, whatever, and you can kind of look at it in a different way and participate in it in a different way. And so I think at best, that's what we can do with Magic, right? Where you can kind of like recognize something familiar in it and kind of love what you loved about ancient Egypt and Amonkhet. But it's put through enough lens where you're like, oh, this is a completely new experience that I can enjoy in a different way.
Cool.
Yeah, it's, yeah. No, go on.
Oh, did you have more?
No, it's okay.
Okay. This question comes from at Ajani Coldmane. That one's for you, Steve.
Not Johnny Goldman?
Good. I like it.
Johnny Coldmane.
Coldmane. Instead of Goldmane.
Oh, my God. No, the first week that I was here, Nick sent me an email asking for something about, he wanted like a document or an image for a Johnny Goldmane, but his autocorrect changed it to a Johnny Goldman, and a Johnny Goldman is not my new favorite person. It's always a Johnny Goldman.
So this comes from at a Johnny Coldmane. It's a two-part question. I think the part you're going to want to talk to is the second part, but we'll read the whole question.
Okay.
How does story balance out the needs of color balancing planeswalkers for standard with the needs of the story? This is a roundabout way of asking what Wizards of the Coast is doing for Green Mage fans who were in agony after Garrick and Nissa left the Mono Green Pastures.
So, it's funny you asked that question.
It's so funny.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like we planned something here.
Which was a real question.
Yeah, it was a real question.
This was an actual real question.
Real person. Yeah. But no, we're very excited because we're very excited about Vivian. Mm-hmm. And we're excited.
Does everyone know who Vivian is?
They're not going to answer, but hopefully.
Yeah. No points on M19. Play some M19. Yeah.
But so we're excited to announce that we're doing a three-part introductory story for Vivian that's being mm-hmm. written by Cassandra Caw, who has written Hammer on Bones and some other great Lovecraft horror fiction, detective fiction. A Song for Quiet. Mm-hmm. And we have some original art that we've commissioned for it, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And
So we're doing right by Vivian.
So we're doing right by Vivian and Green Planeswalker fans. You're going to get something awesome very soon. And then to answer the question, there's a lot of back and forth between R&D and the world building and franchise story team mm-hmm. about. So they kind of come to us with the technical requirements of the set, and then there's back and forth where we take, you need a blue-green planeswalker, and you need it in this set that's in 2 years' time, and we kind of look at who we've told stories about previously and who we are going to tell stories about, and we look at the red-green planeswalkers, and we say, this character could use a story, and then we think about what plane it's on and which other characters are already in there, and would we be able to tell a good story, and then we go back with a recommendation, and then mm-hmm. R&D is like, that planeswalker doesn't work technically, so could we use this other one, and so there's a lot of back and forth, but
sure.
It's tricky, definitely tricky, but it tends to start with the question from the technical side, and then we try to move the pieces around and make the characters get an even attention.
Where they need to be. I think so. Okay, so I think this is going to be our last question. We're almost out of time. This is from @Vronos. Daniel, I think you were talking about some of this before we got on the stream. So Duels, the web comics, and the IDW comics carried a lot of supplemental story weight over the past decade. Are there similarly supplemental storytelling outlets planned nowadays that you can reveal or discuss?
Not that I can reveal or discuss.
All right!
And that's it. But that's generally something we want to keep doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, we want to explore all different kinds of avenues for telling stories with these characters.
Sure.
And that's why it's so exciting, the work that I'm doing right now with these artists in-house, right? Mm-hmm. To start to flesh out, who are these characters? What do they look like from all angles? How do their powers work? So that then, when those opportunities arise, we're like, hey, here you go. Here's what you need to tell these stories.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Everyone for tuning in. Before we go, we've created this handy dandy stream graphic that is going to show you
what is on the docket
for the next 2 weeks at twitch.tv/magic. You can see Weekly MTG is on there next week. The week after that, Weekly MTG is taking the week off because of the Pro Tour and Silver Showcase and a number of things happening in Minneapolis. I'm going to be there. And next week, we have a really cool show for everyone who likes C18 and actual previews.
Yes,
we will have actual previews.
Actual previews.
Gavin Verhey is going to be on the show. James Wyatt's also going to be on the show.
Yeah, and he's going to be talking about a pretty special project that I think fans of D&D might be excited to tune in for.
I think maybe. coming up next, right here on this channel, so stay where you are. Keep it on, keep those headphones on, keep the alt tab if you're at work going. And Kenji Igashira is going to be streaming right here.
That's right. Numoth the Nummy himself going to make some cool plays for people watching twitch.tv/magic.
So stay tuned for that, and we will see you next week on Weekly MTG.
Did we get through the whole show with...
Without a single one. Good job, everybody.
Nice work.
Yes, no money in the swear jar.
Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks.